Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit, and I'm Dr. Lisa. Hey, how you doing? Fucking pandemic, man. You know what I've been wanting to tell you guys? This is a mostly difficult time. And if you're needing any help, there are a lot of resources out there for you. And one of them is the Neighborhood Psychiatric Association in Chelsea. And another is CMPS, okay? CMPS.com. And they have a sliding scale for psychotherapy. So I can... contact me and I can put you in touch with a licensed therapist, not somebody like me, okay? So that's at Dr. Lisa Levy, SP. It's been a rough week for me because I'm under a lot of pressure. I actually have to have 20 paintings made in 2 weeks, but I can do that. I'm going to do that. Anyway, thanks again for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm here every Thursday, 2 to 3 p.m., and we are, we are getting along during the pandemic, but we do need your help. And I encourage you to go to radiofreebrooklyn.org and check us out, download our app, donate to keep us on the air, keep the show on the air. And anyway... it's a fucked up time. This whole Ruth Bader Ginsburg thing just put me over the edge. I can't take it. And that's why I'm here. I'm doing this. I'm gonna keep my shit together because I'm here with you, right? We're in it together. So today is a really, speaking of keeping our shit together, today is a really great day because I have the honor of helping to promote the Great Exhibition Space Benefit. And I have one of their more extraordinary performers on today, Goodwin, and she's going to be with us in a minute, and we're going to tell you all about her. And she's one of the most, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I think she's one of the most extreme performance artists I've had on here. And that is saying a lot. So from September 22nd to 28th, Grace Exhibition Space presents a week-long virtual art event and fundraiser. You can watch all this shit online at Grace Space. It's grace-exhibition-space.com. And you can go to their website, their Facebook page, and donate some money to them too. Jesus, we're all struggling here. It's unbelievable. So Grace Exhibition Space, I've performed there. It's a wonderful, wonderful place. And they do bring performance art that's really hard, that's really daring and really important and really enlightening and thought-provoking and entertaining. So it's a major force in the art world, in art, in creativity, in culture, and performing. It was started in 2006 by Jill McDermott and Eric Hokanson, who are two generous, brilliant, driven, incredible people. And I want to give my love and honor and respect to them. And I can't emphasize what an important benefit, what an important project this is. So I'm going to say hello to our guest today. Hi, Goodwin. Say hi.
Hi. Hi, everybody.
Hey, it's so lovely to see you. I told her that I was going to try and plow through her introduction because I really want to talk to her. She's an extraordinary, extreme performer, and she's had an incredible life, and I want to find out about it. So I'm not going to waste a lot of time introducing her. I'm going to find out who she is because you can do your own research and read about her online, okay? Or go to her Instagram. It's Goodwin. It's at Goodwin, G-O-O-D-W dot Y dot and 9. And look her up and find out about her and learn something and broaden your horizons, folks. So here's a little bit about her bio. She is a multidisciplinary artist. She is the author of War Cries and holds distinguished fellowships. Franklin Furness, Ragdale, Judson, you know, Judson Church, you know that. A whole bunch of other things, queer art mentorship. She's published these great articles, which I'm going to post links to, Talking with My Daughter in the New York Times, okay, that's enough. Talking with My Daughter about Service in Iraq. Yes, folks, Goodwin, a performance artist who's been to Iraq. And she also published in the New York Times, And Why Is This Happening in Your Life? Her work was shortlist Pushcart Prize for the poem Thou Art God. Okay, so she was nominated for that. Is that enough? I mean, it's a lot of stuff. So the thing is that Goodwin is going to be performing at the festival, at the Grace Exhibition Space Festival, and she's going to tell us a little bit about her performance, and then so you will know what to look for and why it's going to be fabulous. And then we're going to ask her about her life. So Goodwin, would you do us the honor of explaining just a little bit about the performance you're doing for the Grace Space Benefit and Give to Grace Benefit and when you're going to be on?
So, basically, the benefit is going to be a fundraiser, and because we all need those funds, people. And I'm going to be on September 25th. It's going to be a taping shown of the performance I did last year. Mm-hmm. For them, called Ain't I a Woman, Dust Chronicles 2. I hope y'all enjoy that. And I'm going to be on the panel with them on the 28th of September. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be interesting.
I'll have all these links. All these links will be are posted on my Facebook page. So you can go to that when I'm announcing this show, and you'll see everything all in one place. So tell us just a little bit about the performance that people will see. It's all streamed. That's what you were talking about, right?
The performance that I'm going to do on the 27th, that's going to be a street intervention.
A live stream, but the performance you're doing for Grace Space is a video.
It's going to be a live stream video.
Video, right.
At Grace Space.
Well put. And what are they going to see?
Oh, well, basically, it's me doing a durational for 3 hours. Mm-hmm. Grace Space.
Yes.
And in 2019. And it's going to be me pouring Aunt Jemima pancake mix all over my body, my naked body, and doing poses. Mm-hmm. And it seems very light, but it's very intense, actually.
Uh-huh. And what's intense about it in particular? The fact that you're naked, the fact that you're a large woman, what's intense about it? The fact that you're naked, the fact that you're a large woman, the fact that you're pouring powder, Aunt Jemima, a large black woman pouring Aunt Jemima pancake mix all over yourself. I don't know. What is intense? Which one? Pick one. Those are
all. I think it's all intense combined.
It is.
And it makes a statement all its own about the body and the stereotypes placed upon the body. And just this idea of me literally challenging that. Mm-hmm. And challenging the stereotypes that come with the mammy figure. Mm-hmm. And body and persona.
So a lot of your work is showing your you connecting through your body with your body through your performance. And
yes,
you are, like what I said, a very, very large, you have very large breasts. Let's just put it out there.
Thank you.
Everything. Yeah. Yeah. She's something to look at. You make, you know, your body makes a strong statement in a beautiful way. But people aren't used to seeing stuff like that. They're not used to being, having it presented the way that you present it. It's very, very powerful. And just give me like a snapshot of how it makes you feel and how you feel, some of the reactions you get. Like, show us how extreme it is.
Well, the extreme could be that I get like two-pronged reactions. Either the audience is like shocked and appalled, or they are very like applaudatory and loving of my body and of the ritual that I create. Mm-hmm. So,
do you upset people?
Of course.
And
yes.
Do they get angry? Do they cry?
Yes, they cry, they yell, they get emotional.
They're shocked.
They feel threatened.
Yeah, are they afraid to look?
Some people are afraid to look. Some people look and they feel they have ownership on my body. And I can't say I don't care, but that's a part of the performance.
Mm-hmm. And how do you feel after something like that?
Well, I practice aftercare, so I have to focus on the ritual. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of catharsis in what I do because I focus on the ritual.
Is it healing?
It is.
And you've been doing this for 3 years. You said you've changed your relationship with your body. And tell us about that a little bit.
After the first time I was almost arrested for the performance.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that too.
It's not illegal, but people frame it in a way that makes it lewd.
It's nudity, but not sexuality. I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
You don't have to. It's not lewd to be topless in New York City.
No, I know. But
people frame it in a way where it's like, you know, racist BS.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And yeah, that's what gets the cops coming. And
are you actually provoking people to think of it? Are you provoking race? I mean, do people come out and say, like, you mean they give you racist shit?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Sexist, racist.
And is that how do the police respond to you?
It depends where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in the Bronx and I did it, they were, one cop was very irate to the point where he was going to pull me up by my hair and arrest me.
Mm.
And I had to deal with him and the ambulance workers. Because apparently you have to be deranged to do what I do.
I don't think so. And you guys listening don't think so. Because you're all fucking deranged, or you wouldn't be listening to this show anyway.
Well, it's like,
we're on your side for sure. Yeah.
I tell people sanity is overrated.
I love it. Yeah.
So you could be intelligent and not sane. And that's okay. And I mean, it's not pandemonium. It's not for me. The performance isn't pandemonium. But for a lot of people, even in New York City, it really is.
Well, it's very confrontational in that people don't know what to make of it or do with it. It makes people wake up, and we don't, you know, a lot of people can't. It's so in your face is really what it is. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's why we're encouraged. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for helping our society for real. I mean, not kidding. The thing I really wanted to talk about with you today, Goodwin, is that I wanted to talk about your background and your time in Iraq, things like that, because I don't know. I do not meet a lot of artists. Maybe that's on me, but you were brought up in Bed-Stuy, and you lived there, you said, from 1980 to 1995, and then you moved to the Bronx, and you know, and whatever in your life led you to going to signing up with the army and going to Iraq and serving there. And you're also a single mom and you're queer. And I just find that, I think that we need to understand, and I personally want to understand about your background and your childhood, because I don't know a lot of people like you, and I really wish I did, and I want to know. So would you do us the favor of sharing, you know, how you grew up with us and, you know, your trip to Iraq? Why don't we start with where you were born, who you were born to?
Okay.
First year. Start with the beginning.
Start with the beginning.
We have 40 minutes, so we'll see.
That I know of.
That you know of.
Well, my mother's name is Maria.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't marry my father. My father was in another relationship while he was with my mother.
You mean he was cheating on his girlfriend?
Or his fiance.
Oh, okay.
And Brooklyn was very formative years. We lived with my stepdad, who's deceased now.
Mm-hmm. And is your mom still around?
Yeah, my mom still is alive.
Do you have a good relationship with her?
I think it's improved a lot. It's improved a lot. She she hates Ain't I a Woman, but
she hates your performance. Let's just say that. Well, any mother would.
I mean, no,
not any mother, but yeah. I mean, that I'll give her that. That's okay. I'm not gonna judge that.
I guess.
I'll give her that. But so what was your mom doing when she had you? Was she was obviously a single mom, right? Did she live alone? Did she have a job?
She lived with my stepfather off and on.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom had a lot of illnesses, so she couldn't work.
Oh, really?
And yeah.
Can you tell us about that?
I mean, it was nothing severe, but it would
just
it,
a bunch it was, of things.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
And so we were kind of dependent on the government, the system.
The government.
For many, many years.
Fucked up government that we have now.
Yeah.
Or then. Those were the Reagan years, weren't they?
Yeah, those were the Reagan years.
Oh, God. Those were the worst. That's when that's when I entered the workforce. Everything went downhill. Oh.
Yeah.
So you were living you were living on welfare in Bed-Stuy as a baby, right?
Yeah.
And you lived there until you were 15.
Yeah.
And what was that like? What was Bed-Stuy like then?
It was a strange upbringing, because you had this strange mixture of violence and drugs.
Mm-hmm.
With love and affection.
Huh. So where's there violence? Were you afraid of getting mugged? Did you know people in your neighborhood? Like, what was that like?
I mean, I wasn't afraid of getting mugged. I was afraid of getting raped. I mean, there were a lot of crackheads
mm-hmm.
after a while
mm-hmm.
that would do anything to little kids.
Really?
And yeah, you hear on the news or through the grapevine all the time.
Did you see stuff like that? Did you witness things like that?
No, thankfully I did not.
Thankfully, yes.
Yeah, I.
What about drugs? Crack was really big, as you say. And
well, it wasn't in my house.
It wasn't in your house. So your mom, your family never took drugs.
Yeah, my mom never took drugs.
That's a blessing, right? That's.
But her best friend was a crackhead. Who was my babysitter.
That's not funny.
That is hilarious, actually. It is hilarious.
You were babysat by a crackhead. Yeah, yes. I mean, look at you. I gotta love that somehow.
Yeah.
So what was that? So you had you knew a lot of crackheads firsthand then, right?
Yeah.
And what was that like? What was your impression of crackheads as a kid?
It was sad because it was like we knew them before they were on crack. And we knew them before, we knew the after, during the years, and some of them the after if they survived. Mm-hmm. And it was just, we lost a lot of people
mm-hmm.
to crack and AIDS. Mm-hmm. We lost a lot of people.
Oh, and AIDS too.
Yeah.
So yeah. Is AIDS something that was common in your community then?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But we never spoke about it. We never called it AIDS.
What, how did you think about it?
Like when I didn't really have a chance to process it
mm-hmm.
until I was older mm-hmm. because so many people who had it and contacted it they just died within 6 months. The people were just dropping like flies.
And did you see that? Did you saw
people? That I saw.
Yeah. That's a lot. That's a lot more than, that's a lot. That's a
yeah.
lot. And you were in, I'm going to say, a Black neighborhood, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Black and Puerto Rican, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And racism is horrible today, but it must have been very, I bet it was pretty extreme in the neighborhood that you were in. Like, did being Black then, I mean, it's a liability now, but was that must have been even more profound then?
It's weird because it's like, even though I was in the crack infested neighborhood, we had really good teachers. We had really good, that made do. They made mm-hmm. do.
So you had a lot of strong people.
I had a lot of fearless people.
Mm.
But they also, their expectations were very high.
Oh, really?
And that was, yeah, that put a lot of pressure on us too.
You mean to do well in school?
Not just to do well in school, but to uplift the race.
Oh, that's so positive. I'm real. Oh.
But for a little kid, it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I see. So like what, yeah, right. Stay in line. So you have more pressure to like be not misbehave than like maybe a white kid in a suburb.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see what you mean. No bad, because they didn't, yeah, I get that. What was your school like? Was it safe?
It was safe. It's just that it was school was kind of boring to me.
Mm-hmm. Did you have friends and stuff? Did you have good relations?
I had friends. I didn't have good relations with them.
What do you mean?
I was very nerdy and I kept to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked poetry.
Yeah, I was gonna say you seem kind of naturally intellectual. It might not have, you know.
I was naturally in my head.
Yeah, you were in
I have more friends now than I did back then, though.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more of a people person now in my old
You definitely put your... Yeah, I could see why. So I'm trying to understand the person who would have... You signed up to go to the Army, right?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to understand who that was. What version of you... was that person?
I was very young.
How old were you?
I was in my early 20s. Mm-hmm. But by the Army standards, I was already old. Because,
Right.
Yeah.
18.
A lot of them enlisted when they were 18, 19. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you're surrounded by liquor. You're surrounded by drugs. And
In the Army?
There's
a lot of drugs in the Army?
Yes. You get some of the best drugs in the Army.
You mean like what?
Percocets, Oxycontin.
Prescription drugs. That.
Yeah. Not just prescription. Cocaine, speed.
Heroin?
I never saw heroin.
You can't find a war on heroin, I don't think. That would be hard.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I could see. Cocaine, for sure. That's great for armies, but...
It depends where you are.
But do supervisors, it's kind of a wink and a nod thing. Everybody knows it's part of the culture there.
It depends. If you're a guy, you get the wink and a nod.
Oh.
But if you were black, if you were a white guy, you get that wink and that nod.
Uh-huh.
And you get a free pass. Mm. But if you were anything other than that, you would get shit.
And that makes sense. I get
that. Yeah, I saw the best of them just get ran out of the Army.
So what happens? So you mean you get into the Army and then all of a sudden you're confronted with all the, even though you grew up in Bed-Stuy, you're confronted with all this crap that you had never seen, that you hadn't really had to deal with on your own before, or is that what you meant?
Yeah, it was a little bit outside of my my bubble. Mm-hmm. In my community, in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And 'cause I met so many different people that were white, black, Hispanic, coming from different areas in the United States.
Right.
And that changed my whole perspective about, what do you think of this place or what do you think of that place?
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by change? How did it change your perspective?
I learned that being from New York City is wonderful because the culture can't be beat.
But, I agree.
Yeah, the culture cannot be beat.
No.
But there's other culture in other places that are just as competitive and just as worthy of your attention.
Right.
A little bit.
Right. So what made you sign up for the Army? What the fuck were you thinking? Jesus.
I just wanted to get out. I wanted to be on my own. Mm-hmm. I was desperate for that. And I was just like, I had enough of being under my mom's roof. Mm-hmm. And that was it. But I wasn't trying to do ordnance. I was trying to go into journalism because I wanted to write for a living. So it's
I see.
At the time, I wasn't aware of my artistic options. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, it's either this or jumping off the housing project's roof. So I was that frustrated.
And college wasn't even in the ballpark.
I mean, I was in college, but I felt like it wasn't working out. Mm-hmm. Like, I wanted to write. Mm-hmm. And I never felt like anything in college taught me how to write. I taught me how to write.
Did a lot of your friends go to college? Was college part of the, I'll just say it, in my neighborhood, everybody was expected to go to college. Were you expected to go to college?
Yeah.
You were?
Yeah.
That's good to hear. So I want to hear what being in, what the fuck was it, being in Iraq? I mean, that's artist, a writer, a black queer woman in the Army in Iraq. I want to know about that.
How can I sum it up?
I don't think it does. We still have half an hour. your impression like? Like, what was it like when you got there? Like, what was there a moment or a p- point or a series of events where you were like, oh my God, where the fuck am I?
In Iraq, definitely.
Uh-huh.
In Iraq, it was like, I gotta get the hell out of here.
Well, what
after
was
a
it,
while.
What was it like when you, like, was it shocking or
scary? I will tell, I never dealt with so much racism and sexism and ableism in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of points that made it hectic and heavy, mm-hmm. especially going to war.
So you
but
were,
but it was
combat.
Also adventurous.
Yeah,
it was also very adventurous, and it's like you don't get to have those decisions every single day, and so you don't get to have those decisions, and it made changes in me.
Mm-hmm. And how would you describe, what do you, how do you describe that? It must change, it can't not change you.
No, if you're not affected by it, something's wrong with you.
I know. So did it show you the side, a potential or the bound, did it push your idea of what being human is?
Yeah, it did. It made me confront what mortality is, what humanity is, what it is to be human, what is it to be an object in a system, a cog on a wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps the system keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize that when the system is so wrong, because you know, a lot of people don't want to talk about how the black and brown people of Iraq look like the black and brown people in America.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wanted to talk about it over there. And to this day, nobody wants to talk about that with me.
You mean there was like a lot of serious racism in the army and that pardon the pun, sort of colored your experience?
Were
you singled out? Were you harassed being of color?
It wasn't like direct harassment. It wasn't like, oh, look at this nigger. It was more like I wish it was direct, because then you know then you know who you can associate with.
Right.
It was just this othering that the white guys had. And it will trickle down to us. Everybody need to fit in with their clique. Just like in prison, if you're black, you need to fit in with the blacks. If you are Hispanic, Mexican or something, you need to fit in with them. If you're white, you need to go with the Aryan Brotherhood, or you're going to get chewed up and spit out.
So did you have friends? Did you hang out with black people mostly?
I'm very eclectic, so I hung out with different people.
Mm-hmm.
I had friends that were white. I had one of my best friends, she was German.
Mm-hmm.
While I was in Germany, she was German. I had a lot of people in my life, including the father of my child,
mm-hmm.
who influenced it in different ways,
mm-hmm.
both good, bad, and the ugly.
Mm-hmm.
So I went through a lot of changes, a metamorphosis while I was in the army.
Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if your creativity and your writing was sort of, I wonder if that was kind of a thread that you held on to.
Yeah.
The beauty of art.
I would write personal essays and stuff. I would write poetry and stick them up on my wall, mm-hmm. and not let anybody in my room because I didn't want them to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something. That was something that came from years of being in Brooklyn. and being very young. And I have books on top of books on top of books filled with poetry and personal thoughts and just personal feelings. So that carried over.
Do you have friends from being from your Army days?
I kept up with one. The rest, no. The rest, some of them tried, and I just blocked. I just blocked it out.
The whole Army experience?
For a while, yeah.
It's a shock to get back, I think, for most soldiers when you come back to being a citizen here. Is that right?
Yes.
And was it really, did you have help? Is it really, did you have trouble integrating back in?
Oh, yeah. I did what we call couch surfing. That's when you're homeless and you're sleeping on other people's couches. I did that for a while before I got integrated into the system. And then the system said that we have no homeless vets. And I'm like, that's a lie.
You have no what? Sorry?
I remember when Bloomberg got on TV and said that we had no homeless vets in the system.
Oh, homeless vets. Oh.
And I ended up proving them wrong.
Did you... do something? Did you?
I went to Coalition for the Homeless and I spoke with them and I proved that I'm a vet. And it was like a powder keg.
What do you mean by that?
I ended up a story about me, an op-ed was done in the New York Times.
Oh, wow.
In 2004.
Oh, wow. I'm looking that up, baby.
Yeah. It's in About New York, New York Times.
2004.
April 2004.
Okay. April 2004. I will be posting a link to this. So you protested in a sense. Did you have an effect?
Yeah.
Were you able to have an effect?
I had somewhat of an effect. Changes were made. Lots of changes in the city were made. I can't say that I made things. I know there was a difference made. That's the best way to put it.
Yeah. I mean, you spoke up. You had your voice heard. And I'm sure... you know, that must have been rewarding or gratifying or soothing even.
It was relieving.
Yeah. Yeah. That you were empowered. Like you've always been empowered in some way, I think. Is that right?
I ask myself a question all the time when it comes to being at a crossroads. Can you live without knowing? You live without knowing the answer to this question? If you can, then go ahead. But if you can't, then you have to fulfill the quota to get the answer.
And what does that mean? Can you give me an example?
Oof.
Or you don't have to.
No, there's just too many.
Like, what kind of question? Give me an idea of, like, what that means if you don't know the answer. Can you live with, like, when you were homeless, or couch surfing, whatever you call it, would you say that you could or couldn't live without knowing where you were going to live? Or
without knowing what it was like to fight for what I lived in. And back then, so many people became homeless and would go right back into the military. And I didn't have the support system at the time. my mom was not going to take care of my daughter.
So and you were taking care of your daughter this whole time. Let's just understand that.
Yeah.
So that's huge.
Yeah.
That's a huge responsibility.
Yeah.
How did you provide for her? How did you get food for her and stuff like that?
Well, I mean, it was a hustle. I had to stay in different places, at different shelters. Just trying to make ends meet. I had a little savings coming back from the Army, so that helped.
Oh, yeah, right. That's right. It sounds like a lot of hard work.
It was well worth it though.
Yeah. I can imagine. I mean, that's a great, I mean, those are really profound experiences to have in the rear view mirror at this point. I mean, but what do you think the biggest impact, like how does your experience in Iraq translate, say, into your artwork? Where do you, is it the fearlessness? Is it the drive, or what about it? The discipline, what must be a lot of discipline, right?
You mean into the Ain't I a Woman performances?
Yeah.
Definitely. Oh. You know, I always drove on the idea of authenticity. And Iraq for me was a very vivid, authentic account of what capitalism does overseas with the military industrial complex. And bringing that home, the war at home, basically with racism and sexism and homophobia, still present and rampant and wild. And ableism, all of these things combined to show me who we are and who I am as a person in the middle of it.
Wow. You've lived like every, I mean, the palette of your experiences is so vast. It's really, like to be able to draw on everything you've been through to make work out of or do, or just to move forward in your life is, I don't know, that's so rich, but so,
oh, thank you.
But so expensive. I mean, so emotionally, it must be so emotionally expensive. How did you get through all, how is it that you're I just have to say, just what I was trying to say to you guys. Look at all this bullshit, and this woman is making really important and meaningful work as a writer, performance artist, and all this stuff. And, you know, she didn't, inner resources and discipline, guys. This is such a great example of that. Hard work, drive, motivation, all that stuff. Nothing can, if you really have it in you, nothing can hold you back. That's what I'm trying to say. Is that right? Is that right, Goodman?
I believe so. The sky's the limit. The limit's the sky. Is how you see it. Is how you see it. This is not to say that there aren't obstacles. I'm not going to lie to anyone.
You've had so many. You're all obstacle. Yeah. You've gone through all obstacle. Do you feel like your hardest years are behind you now?
No, because COVID is hell.
Oh, yeah.
2020 has been a trash year for me.
Well, for everyone. Well, you have a daughter that's high school age now, right?
Yeah.
So that's hard on her, right?
I mean, yeah. Yeah, she's coping, though. She is my hero. She is one of the few heroes that I have. That is like a person who deals with struggle and tries to rise above it. I'm really proud of her.
That's so, I love hearing that. So you had to navigate her through all of what you've been through as well, right?
Yeah.
And how did you do that? Was it like, did you communicate with her? Were there other family members, or how did you manage? How the fuck?
Like, most people can't. I did not do it alone.
Most people couldn't get through, like, you know, getting a kid through high school under the best of circumstances. Don't throw in homelessness and a war and all that other shit.
Yeah. I did not do it alone. So I'm still co-parenting.
So the father is involved?
No.
Oh, who's the co-parent?
So the co-parent is her foster dad.
Oh, okay.
She was in foster care a few times.
Mm-hmm.
ACS loved my incompetent black ass. Like, I was just in and out of the hospital for many years.
ACS, what's that mean?
ACS is Administration for Children's Services.
Oh, okay. So they
wanted... they were Child Protective Services.
Oh, okay. So they would take over, really, isn't it?
Yeah. And I would have to fight to get her back. And I had a lot of good friends at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And her, my best friend stepped up and became her foster father.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really beautiful. So he was already integrated into your world, into your life.
And it was rough because it was rough on him and rough on me and rough on her.
Mm.
We went through a lot. We went through a lot together and separately.
Mm.
And I know what it's like for people to give up.
What do you mean? You mean give up on their children?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because
there was a point where I gave up and I didn't have fight in me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, well, if she could go up for adoption, that would be great.
Mm.
And then something inside of me just wouldn't sign the papers and wouldn't get the ball rolling.
Mm.
Because it was like I didn't know who I was without her.
Was that one of the harder things out of all of this?
Yeah.
Dealing with that was one of the most difficult, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I can't believe
and how my sanity would play into that.
Mm-hmm. So were you in, you were like would, what would make sense is you would be in you seem incredibly stable now. You've got, you know, a good career. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm so happy I'm talking to you now because I can't even picture the person you're talking about. And, I have a lot of compassion and, you know, I feel, I don't really know you, but I feel love for that person. I feel love for that person. I do. I feel like.
Thank you.
That humanity and whatever that is in that person that held on to your daughter and was truly, I feel like you truly did the best you could with what you were given. Is that, is that right? So, so going back and forth with your daughter, so she was with you most of the time, but there were periods where she wasn't, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I was deployed, I had her. She was a month old.
When you were in the service?
Yeah, when I was in the service.
Uh-huh.
And what do you, mm-hmm. when I got back, she was 10 months old.
Mm-hmm. So she stayed with your friend, or who did she?
No, she stayed with a woman that I was romantically involved with.
Oh, okay. So when you got back and you saw her after 10 months, what was Was that hard or what? I can't imagine.
I mean, for me, it was a delight.
Uh-huh.
For Shyla, it was a whirlwind, because who is this person trying to hug me and touch me? Right. I don't know you. It went from that, and then she remembered the sound of my voice in the pitch. And that's like, I saw the light come on in her eyes.
Oh my God.
Realized who I was.
Oh my God. Wow, that's profound. I can't get over that. She remembered. See, guys, that's like, yeah, that's what the non time before you learn to speak is like when you really do process a lot, you know, stuff the stuff you can't remember is the stuff that's really deep in there.
Yeah.
Stuff you're too young to remember. So that light went on. Did that go on right away, or was that after a couple of days, or?
That was like a couple of hours.
Mm-hmm.
A few hours. It was four hours.
That must have been so intense. Like just her not knowing you, that must have been. And then when she finally recognized you, did that change the dynamic?
Oh my God, she wouldn't let me go.
Aww.
I couldn't even go to the bathroom. I had to take her with me.
So when, now have you guys talked about all that?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And there was a point in the time where I shut down for many years. And I didn't let my daughter in. And my daughter's very inquisitive, mm-hmm. and intuitive. Mm-hmm. And she picked up on these feelings, mm-hmm. right away. Mm-hmm. And they made her anxious and worried.
Mm-hmm.
I decided to open up more, little by little, about our history in the military. Mm-hmm. And now I'm able, that she's old enough, I could have an adult conversation with her back and forth.
Mm-hmm. So does that feel like, in a certain way, that it must be really healing or bonding for both of you, because you get to feel loved and accepted by her for exactly who you are, right?
Yes.
And then she also feels closer to you because you trust her with who you are.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, this isn't, I'm going to need a shot after this or something. I don't know. I don't even drink hard liquor or anything, but maybe now's a good time to start. Wow. So we only have 5 minutes left, and I want to spend the last minute or two thanking everybody, like, Grace Exhibition Space and Radio Free Brooklyn, and giving out all the information I need to give out. But in the meantime, let's just wrap it up with a couple of minutes about, I want to hear what you plan on doing with your art. And I don't mean just, like, I think you're totally capable of changing, having an effect on society, and I think you think so. I think that's part of it, isn't it? Having an effect out in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, you're doing it for you, but what do you hope to express, and looking at the future of your work and stuff, like, what are you thinking about? What would you like to accomplish? Broad strokes.
What do I like to accomplish?
Yeah, do you hope...
Just, like, I want to bring this idea of equality and equity,
mm-hmm.
into the art world.
Mm.
That's something that I am just gunning for. With the audiences and with the financiers.
Uh-huh.
To bring equality and equity into what is popular.
Oh, I am so I am so there. I want, thank you. So you want to make, yeah. So you want to put it out there in the art world and you want equality. So, you know, like the whole thing is like, we are just humans. And that's what you're talking about. Like just that people are seen as humans and their differences are about who they, their individuality, not about the fact that they're human. It's about that I'm different because I made this or I do this or I like this.
I think self-expression is definitely a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I strive for, that I'm very like keen on.
Mm-hmm.
That's the real production.
Mm-hmm.
Self-expression.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Being in touch with who you are and putting it out there in a very direct way. And
yes.
So I'm going to have to, we're going to have to like leave it there, sadly, but I do, I mean, we could go on, Jesus, but we don't have the time on the show. It's over, almost over. But I do really applaud and encourage, and I'm grateful. Thank you for everything you're doing for,
thank you for having me.
For the art could really use that. And I think this year has been difficult, but productive in a certain way for equality. Do you, you feel that? You feel encouraged? I feel encouraged. That's good. So let's just give a shout out to Radio Free Brooklyn, which is the best radio station in the Western Hemisphere, because I've listened to all of them, and this is for sure the best. And Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit is a really important part of our community. I would love it if you help support our community, which is, you know, we have 70 live shows and it's a nonprofit and it's tax deductible. But I also want to make sure that we get in a plug, I guess, let's just say it, for the Grace Exhibition Space, Give to Grace, from Tuesday, September 22nd through Monday, September 28th. All the relevant links will be on my website. Make sure you check out Goodwin, who obviously has a lot going on and is, you know, we could learn from for a long time. And she's at on Instagram at Goodwin, that's GOODWYW.N9. And tell us again, Goodwin, if you will, when your performances, you mentioned two performances. Why don't you give us the details? You got 1 minute, go.
Okay, so on the 27th of September, that's a Sunday, I'm going to be back in Brooklyn. I'm going back to the block where I was raised, and I'm going to be performing there. That's, please go to my IG for details and DM me if you want to come, and I'll send you a flyer with all the details. And also on the 28th, I'm going to be on a panel for Grace Space. And it's going to be exciting. So check me out there.
Terrific. Okay. Thanks again. And stick around, you guys. We've got great programming this afternoon. Like right after this is Lost and Rewound. This really like fun music, talk, show, storytelling with Elon Danziger. And it's going to be a great afternoon at Radio Free Brooklyn. Thanks for listening. Bye. Dr. Lisa gives a shit about